If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no.
Witch Police Radio.
Welcome to Witch Police Radio. This is Greg Soden, your guest host from Buffalo, New York. On this episode, I have a wonderful and quick conversation with George Samoleski from Propagandy. While Propagandy likely need little introduction to many listeners of this show, just as a quick overview, they formed in the 1980s and have to date released 7 full-length albums, a live album, a few 7-inches, a 10-inch split, a rarities compilation, and more. Their last record, Victory Lap, on Epitaph Records, was released in 2017. Recently, social media posts emerged showing the band in the studio with John Paul Peters at Private Ear Recording in Winnipeg. Propagandy also popped up in May of 2024 for their first live appearance in quite some time to play a short set as a trio at the Band Together Music and Solidarity Humanitarian Aid Fundraiser for the Citizens of Gaza benefit show at the Park Theater. George recently laid down drum tracks for the forthcoming 8th Propagandy full-length LP, and it was a delight to hear about this process, his gear selections, the writing process, and his thoughts on the recent show. Please enjoy my conversation with George Samoleski. George, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Greg, how's it going?
Excellent, thank you. It is wonderful to have you back after, I think we last talked in 2021 for some Propagandy cover songs, but it's delightful to, you know, get together again and hang out and chat about how things have been. Propagandy has been off the road since September of 2022, and I know there's a lot going on. I'm wondering if you just want to start off by giving a little bit of your general thoughts on the past year and a half since the band has been off the road and what you all have been generally up to in that time.
Yeah, I guess you could say that 2022 was one of the most challenging years that we've ever had in terms of trying to arrange live shows. Like, that was a batch of cluster F's. I mean, we tried to do some shows in May out east in Canada, and then in September out west in Canada. We were supposed to go down the west coast from Seattle to San Diego that September, but we ended up getting derailed by COVID on both of those trips. So unfortunately, we had to cancel some shows in Saskatchewan on the front end of our May dates, and then the entire back end of our September dates got canceled. We had COVID issue in Vancouver that we were aware of the day that we were supposed to cross into the U.S. And head down to Seattle and, do 7 shows down the coast. Our booking agent, Margie, in the States did a great job putting everything together. And it was, the aftermath of having to cancel those dates, it dragged on for another 6 weeks. And we ended up doing 3 makeup dates in Southern California, in Pomona, LA, and San Diego on, on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It was... So we were starting to kind of write over the course of that year, getting some riffs together and kind of jamming on new stuff. But you know, we kept going back to perform, like getting prepped for live shows and all that kind of stuff. And it put us really through the ringer. And towards the end of that, it was like, okay, these makeup shows were okay. Trying to play on a show on a Monday or a Tuesday that was originally scheduled for a Friday or Saturday. Like it just had a, you know, the vibe was affected. A lot of people didn't take the rebates on their tickets and many of them didn't show up. So it was kind of like 2/3 full rooms. And we tried to do our best to kind of accommodate makeup dates, but it was just really hard. And I think a lot of bands that get faced with that, it's like you have slim pickings for the venues and you're not going to get anything close to the original sort of, what the original dates were intended to be like and all that. It was, I think we kind of hung it up at the end of October and we're just kind of like, okay, that is the end of live shows. Let's just forget about that for a while. And I think at that point, it really took the edge off of, feeling like we had to do a bit of both, trying to write, trying to stay engaged with, doing the live stuff. And that's also after a few, the whole COVID era, we didn't play any shows, in between like 2019 and 2022. So there was a big gap there. And that the pressure slowly mounting, okay, we got to start doing stuff. What are we going to do and all that? And in a nutshell, it was like 2022 was just kind of a mishmash of trying to go in a million different directions and getting stuck with so much troubleshooting, figuring things out as things were falling apart. And it was really draining. So that just led us to let's forget about this stuff. We're not going to play anymore until we actually, have at least some studio dates, penciled in and all that. So I guess that takes us to now. So I don't know if you knew, but we did a number of dates in July recording at Private Ear here in Winnipeg with our friend GP. Originally, I think it was in May. Yeah, March, April, May of this year, we were thinking that we were going to be recording everything in late October of this year. And we were aware that JP and Vanessa had a few dates open in July, like Tuesday to Thursday dates, three consecutive weeks of three dates being open, but the Friday to Mondays being blocked off. And they said we could keep our gear set up after we got sounds and, if we wanted to take advantage of that time. And we kind of molded over and I don't know. Originally, I thought, no, let's just keep it all together. But then we thought, hey, if we break it up a little bit, that'll give us, time to recharge the batteries in between, track for a few days, take a few days off to actually kind of continue prepping and working on stuff a little bit in the miniature downtime that we had between the 3-day sessions. And I think it worked out really good. Like I liked having days on and then days off. It's, I think it was largely circumstantial. We didn't plan it like this, but I think it kind of worked in our favor in a lot of ways. We're done a significant bulk of the drum tracks and we're going to revisit another batch of songs in October, and it's kind of like a two-part process. So I think from now to October we'll see about if any other dates become available there to maybe do some bass tracking and stuff and try to get some of the instruments and maybe some vocals I think going. And then continue tracking drums in October, and we'll see how things go from there. I think we have some mixing time penciled in for November, December, maybe. So everything as of right now is still on track, even though we're pretty early in the process, I guess.
So this seems like a way different way of recording a record than you might be used to, right? Have you ever done it like this before where it's in these like chunks of time that are like super spread apart over long periods of time?
No, we've usually, kind of Well, at least as far as drums go, we usually kind of get in there and get sounds and just kind of get cracking and try to get the drums done in however many consecutive days possible. I'm thinking back to before we started working with JP at Private Ear. So that would have been supporting cast. Like a lot of those, and when we did Potemkin City Limits, like it was just kind of day after day. I can't remember. I think sometimes we took a Sunday off, but it's just kind of like day after day after day. And that I think in retrospect has a way of just kind of wearing you down a little bit. I find the studio tracking process to be like, it takes a lot of energy, like to just be mentally on throughout an entire day where it's like, okay, you get a little bit done in the morning and then, okay, when are we going to get moving on afternoon stuff? So just trying to stay loose throughout the whole day and engaged and keeping your blood moving and all that kind of stuff. It's not exactly easy. It's not tremendously, like it's not rocket science, but it's just kind of, I don't know. Every time I go through it, I feel differently about it a little bit, but this time I certainly appreciated the little pauses in between to kind of, you know, and I guess I should mention too, like when we at Private Ear, we were leaving all the drums set up. So I'm fortunate enough now to have a kid at home and another one at our practice space. And so I had kind of like three kits set up and it's like, okay, if I'm at home, I can do this. If I'm in the city, there was one night that we were going to crash at my sister's place. And it was just like an opportunity where I could get a good practice day in there where she was out doing some stuff with some friends. And ultimately, yeah, our room, my sister's place, a little bit hot. I need my cool sleeping zone to recharge my batteries fully. So I ended up spending most of my time practicing out here, just a little out of town, but it worked. I think it worked out pretty good.
Sweet. I'm curious about the preparation of anything that's like maybe totally different than anything you've ever done on past records, or if there's any preparation leading up to this record that might be something that's like unique across all of your recording experiences.
Yeah, well, I think certainly the most unique aspect of kind of juggling through, I guess, the general process of aging and having done this for so long. I don't know. I've been struggling with tinnitus since the late 90s, and I actually had this weird situation kind of happen towards the end of 2022, actually, that December, where I was consulting with some hearing specialists and stuff. And I don't know. I'm still trying to put it together. I have like a two-tone tinnitus issue. Like my tinnitus went haywire on me, and it changed quite a bit to such a radically different sort of sensory experience, I guess, 24/7 relentless sensory experience that, I had to really, we spent a lot of time in the early part of 2023 last year, refiguring out and measuring decibel levels of, our jam space and kind of coming to some shocking realizations about how much louder it is from the sitting position of where I was at, right behind the drums, and say even 5 or 7 feet over from where the other guys are standing in front of their amps. Mm. And even the decibel readings in front of the guitar or bass amps compared to what it was like right by my ears. If I'm playing loud, you know, max sort of cymbal crashing and max exertion and that kind of stuff. So those early months of last year, Chris and I, I gotta really thank those guys for their patience and diligence with helping me figure this stuff out. But we were measuring stuff out at the practice space and just being like, okay, this is completely insane. And I was dealing with two different audiologists just trying to figure out what's safe at this point. Like I can't imagine going through a third sort of phase of this hearing issue and all that. And So yeah, we really took a lot, like it was a number of weeks to figure out dB levels in my basement at our practice space, what adds up, like adding different layers to it and everything else. And what we kind of came to is like, I started practicing on a drum kit that we've kind of had buried for a good 10 years, thinking that it might be a little bit quieter than our other kits. They have wood hoops on them. We thought maybe if I lightened the gauge of sticks that I was, you know, comfortable playing with, I think since like the later 90s, and pulling back on cymbals, I was playing with extremely light gauge drumsticks and broken cymbals for the better part of last year, just to keep it in check and allow us to spend a lot, like enough time in there jamming and working on the new material and stuff without kind of exhausting ourselves and in our ears. And also I kind of I've temporarily ditched in-ear monitors, and that was it was really, really tricky. Trying to protect my hearing with earplugs and like industrial cups over top, and then having a external amp kind of blasting at me. So it was this weird, you know, how much of this is one step forward, one step back, and are we really achieving anything? But I think we managed to get it down to a point where, and with the coaching of some of the people, this one audiologist who was measuring the output of my in-ears and trying to get a sense of how loud it would be in our room and stuff. And I think we managed to achieve it. Like we rolled it down to a much more comfortable level. And I think with one thing I'm noticing with the change of the gauge of sticks is that my elbow problems are partially going away as well. Like I'm feeling less wear and tear on my forearms, and I'm just thinking, oh man, if you could go back and change one thing, holy shit. Like I embraced bigger is better, louder is better, faster, everything, this sort of idea of like, playing loud music like it's a contact sport, this old Dave Lombardo kind of quote that I sort of wore as like a badge of honor for so many years, just gritting and gutting it out and actually playing in pain a lot of the time. I think I was playing sticks that were just like, Jesus Christ, like these big pieces of lumber and breaking a lot of stuff at the same time. You're trying to get loud sounds out of the drums. And I think that that's one of the tricky things now is playing quieter, but achieving an aggressive sort of tone without slamming the shit out of everything to the point where like I used to hit things like hit it as hard as you can, you know. Sure. That's not really that musical, you know, like they're within that sort of paradigm of just playing hard. It sounds like how it sounds. You're just giving it everything you have. And when you're in your late 20s and 30s, like you can kind of roll with that. But then, you know, there's the cumulative effect of, you know, your joints and all that kind of stuff. And I ended up having, you know, not severe elbow problems, but problematic enough where I wore down some of the tendon, wore down a piece of bone, and I was having this tendon slippage. And anyway, with physiotherapy and that kind of stuff, you can kind of help correct that, which worked for years. But now it's just like, no, play lighter gauge sticks and the whole thing goes away by itself. Good God.
You know,
breaking way less cymbals, let me tell you.
What is the gear? Like, did you make any like gear changes for the new record? Like, give me like a little bit of a gear rundown of what like listeners can hear on this record that you all are making.
Well, drum wise, like I said, we went back to this AOT kit that kind of has a bit of a story to it. There was a guy that we knew locally many, many years ago was getting a backline company together, and he was getting a number of AOT kits custom made for himself. And I think he needed one more, and they were going to give him like a pretty hefty discount. And he basically approached me and said, if you're looking for one of these kits, like, why don't we go like we can split the discount down the middle or whatever. So yeah, Sweet. We got this really nice custom AOT kit made for us. I think it was around 2002, 2003. And then we went to, we were all excited. Okay, let's take our AOT kit and go back to, you know, BC where these things were made, and we'll track our new record, Potemkin City Limits, with these drums. And we get out there, and the recording engineer was just like, nope, not using these, forget it. He had no interest in them at all. I was like, I don't know, I was confused. I think we had different perspectives of maybe the exact time frame that the kit was produced. I think AOTs went through a lot of ownership changes, and maybe the process for building them changed over time. So I think we have a pretty nice sounding kit, to be honest. But yeah, so he didn't want to use it then. We used the toms on supporting cast, but not the kick or the snare. And then on failed states, we did the same thing. Like, everybody thought the kick drum was, it's a 20 inch kick. I think it's a little more standard to have bigger kicks on these recordings. And generally, like, you see a lot of 22s and maybe 24s, but especially when we were doing those older records, it was like, no, we need the kick to be more present, like a larger, heftier sound. And I was into that. I wasn't going to argue with those guys at that time, but this time we kind of came in thinking, no, let's use the small kick, and if we can, let's use the snare too, because like they were all built together. I think there's a little bit of a, I don't know, like carryover between the tone of the snare and the rest of the drums, like an organic carryover. And yeah, so we used everything on these last recordings, and I'm pretty happy with how it turned out. I think it sounds pretty good. And I guess the other thing was that we decided to use smaller crash cymbals. And I think that's just something that I think we're going to stick with from now on. It's just, you know, you have less riding on the crash. That's so much of the volume from where I'm sitting is just this, you know, the crashing ride sections. But I think what we found was like we got to kind of like a happy middle with that stuff. I don't think we need the big roaring crash cymbals of old. Like, we seem to find like a sweet little zone with some of the options that we picked for this record. And we had a larger crash that we kind of swapped in, I think, for one or two songs, but it almost kind of felt like I don't even think we really, really need it. And yeah, so I think we kind of covered all the bases with this smaller, like more consciously smaller and more sort of decisive, you know, just play it like you feel it and mean it with a little bit less behind it. And I think we're sort of achieving similar results. Sounds pretty good.
Nice. Okay, so I did notice that you had a slightly different gear setup at the May 21st, 2024 show. I saw a little bit of video footage, and I did notice you wearing those big industrial ear coverings in the video. Yeah. And I did notice that the cymbals do look smaller for your live setup. So I've kind of noticed that you've been kind of moving the gear around as far as like what you're choosing to play on, which is really cool. But I'm curious, just like on your reflections on that show, because it's the only show you all have done in a long time, and it was a show that you performed as a trio for probably the first time in like 18 years or something like that. So curious on your reflections on the May 2024 show in Park at Park Theater.
Yeah, it was also the I think the shortest show that we played, like going back to probably 1991. Like, it was,
yeah,
pretty sure the set was a little under 20 minutes total.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was one of the reasons why we were able to do that physically, that show. We knew that we didn't have time to prepare a full set. Like, we were unable to do a full show. And we weren't asked to do that. We were just asked to show up for like 15 minutes and, you know, participate with this. It was a benefit show for the International Development and Relief Foundation, which was providing emergency medical kits to, you know, people in Gaza and occupied territories. And it's something that we felt very strongly about supporting. And with a local initiative of some people that were kind of like, hey, we feel like we really want to do something. And it was like, yeah, we talked about it and was like, yeah, our hearts are totally into this, 100%. We wanted to participate, but realized we couldn't do a full show or anything. Like, it was not in our ballpark of considerations to say, hey, let's do something like this ourselves and, you know, get a benefit show together. It was really nice to do it with, you know, people that we hadn't worked before. It was at the Park Theater. We played with a bunch of bands that, like, it's like a multi-genre kind of, you know,
the lineup was cool.
Different performers playing like 15, 20, 30 minutes. It had such a good vibe to it. It was, it really, really felt good. But the other side of that was, this was an occasion for us to kind of try out, like for me specifically, playing without in-ear monitors, which has been many, many years I've relied on those. And just to get a sense, like, can we do this? Like, how is this even going to come across playing like lighter? It was with that kit that I mentioned. And that was another thing about the show, was like, with so many performers and limited changeover time in between sets, I felt like, okay, I want to play that drum kit. I don't want to play a different backline kit. I'd gotten so used to this thing, and I was almost scared to get on like a larger kit. And that was kind of just part of it for me, was like, okay, if I can play these drums and offer it for everybody else to just use as the standard backline kit for the night. And thankfully, everybody's really flexible. They were down with using it and didn't seem to have any issues. So it's kind of a funny kit, because the wooden rims, they actually sit higher on the drums than a normal flanged or die cast hoop would sit on a drum. Like, they're a little bit tricky to play. You hit maybe a little more rim shots unless you're sort of aware of that physical difference. But everybody was cool with it. But I was kind of like, holy shit, this drum kit hasn't been on a stage in like 15 years. And one thing I remember about not liking about this kit was like a real bouncy kind of active, you know, live, like heavy music stage. If there's people on stage jumping around on that stuff, the hardware's pretty lightweight on this thing, and they would just bounce around. It's almost kind of like, I think I remember playing on maybe it was on a drum riser one or something, but it was just like, I'm playing a moving drum kit. Like, this is extra freaking hard. And the hardware is just so finicky, and a lot of things can kind of go wrong. There's so many things that you have to lock with a drum lock. Like, for every stand, there's like four little things that you have to fasten into place. And if one of them comes undone, it could be a train wreck. And I think I remember even a tom going rolling across the stage once while we were playing with this kit years ago. Just like, holy shit. And a few little pieces got lost over the years and just sort of like ramshackle, you know, band-aid fixes. And I was kind of like, oh man, okay, let's use this kit. But I was just kind of hanging around kind of like on the side of the stage, hoping that nothing was going to go haywire with it during that May 21st show. And it held up perfect. And so it seemed like a success on multiple levels. And it was, like I said, it was nice to play with some bands that we otherwise, you know, don't really cross paths with, but we know of locally. It had a really nice vibe in the room and backstage, like the other performers. It was just a really cool thing to kind of, I don't know, like it was a gathering with purpose behind it that felt like validating and powerful. For, you know, you get stuck in your house, in your room, and where you're not talking about these things so much with other people. And it's, I don't know, sometimes I can get pretty frustrated and pretty down on, you know, what the, you know, US and Canada are doing around the world in so many different cases. And with this, I just feel like, you know, even just suggesting a ceasefire seems like some people see that as like this contentious issue. I'm just like, why? You know, we got to get this out in the open and normalize this, you know, the intent of this thing and start, you know, questioning our government and, you know, the reasons for supporting what's going over there, this sort of tacit state support without question. And it felt just really good to participate in that and to make money for a very worthwhile cause. And yeah,
it was good. Love it.